Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Watch the Pro Bowl at least three times.
Boom shakalaka.
John, a man who covered the Atlanta Chiefs inaugural season.
And Hugh, who just keeps it real.
I'm good, I got pants on.
Let's get your day started, Atlanta. This is John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome to the morning show after a very successful, I guess as successful as you could possibly be in this coronavirus era, home opener for the Atlanta Braves last night. We'll react a lot to it during the morning show today as the Braves beat the Rays last night 7-4 and get a win, first ever win at Truist Park. Well, I hope you're having a good Thursday, and we look forward to a very interesting show today because we are loaded today. Hugh Douglas, what is up?
Good morning. Good morning, Atlanta. How's everybody doing? Hope everybody has a wonderful day and had a wonderful day yesterday and enjoyed the home opener. It was pretty interesting with the fireworks and everything. It was a pretty good day.
Yeah, you know, and they had the people that were sitting out on the deck in the Omni, and you could hear some people down in the plaza from the Battery. You know, it's like weird. You can get there, but you can't get in. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, but I kind of figured, you know, from my internet feed or my Twitter feed, I kind of figured it was going to be like that because that's what people were talking about. Like, you know, they were going to be at the Battery. Like, it was party. They were partying. They had a blast. So that was pretty cool to see. Well, it was pretty cool to actually hear.
Yeah, no, it did. I mean. It was pretty cool. And, you know, even, you know, Chip Carey and Tom Glavine referenced him. And, you know, during a tough broadcast it had to be. And I didn't, you know, I mean, yes, I did. I mean, it's so unusual for these broadcasters now, Hugh, because, you know, it's true of Mike Conley, too. They're not going on the road. And so, you know, when they reference the fact that, you know, here are Chip and Tom, and we finally get to actually see the Braves and not just call it off a monitor, that's, you know, that's kind of fun. That's got to be a day. I've never, you know, done that, called a game off a monitor, but that doesn't seem like it would be an easy thing to do.
No, it doesn't. I mean, and credit to the guys that we have here. They do a great job of when they call the games, and it seems seamless, you know, especially when you talk about Mike Conte and Jason Longshore with Atlanta United early on. They did a great job. Chip Carey does a great job. Tom Glavine, you know, everybody. They do a great job of doing what they do.
Yeah, well,
that's why they get paid the big bucks.
There was if you missed the broadcast yesterday, the really nice moment with, you know, Henry Aaron and Andrew Young, you know, in the interview there. Because we don't get to hear from, you know, Hammer and Hank a lot. And, you know, so it was I just really enjoyed listening to those two talk.
Yeah, and the stories that they were telling, you know, and everything. So, yeah, I mean, it's always good to get a history lesson, if you will. Talking about, you know, the game and how it was and how, you know, how they reference how when Hank, you know, I think they said something about even if you take away all his home runs, he still had over 3,000 hits. Mm-hmm. And they, like, so that was pretty interesting. And just to put that in perspective. So, yeah, it's always good to get a history lesson, John.
Yeah, it was really a terrific interview that Chip and Tom did with those two. And, of course, you know, a lot going on in the city. John Lewis's funeral is today. We'll be talking about that a little bit later in the show at 11 a.m. at Ebenezer Baptist Church. But to the Braves, You know, they showed a little bit of grit yesterday after giving up the lead. They rally. Freddie Freeman goes 4 for 5, and you knew it wasn't going to be long before Freddie kind of got into the groove, and boy, did he ever. I mean, he really looked sharp, like old Freddie yesterday.
Yeah, and you can see it on his face. He was happy. He was smiling about that, you know. And it's always good, man. You know, you're talking about him. You know, Matt Adams had some pretty good hits yesterday. So, yeah, the Braves look like they're getting ready. And Soroka, you know what? To be honest, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. He did exactly what we expected him to do on the mound. We just need to get a couple other guys to do the same thing and be the pitchers that we need them to be. And we'll be fine. You know the hitting's going to come around, but you get a couple other guys to do that, we'll be exactly where we want to be.
Yeah, Mike Soroka got another no decision in, second straight outing that he wasn't. Well, of course, the first one, the game they lost, and then this game they won. But, boy, he was lights out on both starts. He's been really good. And so the Braves do get a victory over the Jays, and the same two will go again tonight at Truist Park. The bigger news, too, there's some other bigger news, too, you may have heard if you watched the broadcast yesterday or, you know, listening to 92 on the game, that Nick Markakis is back. Some people were, surprised that Nick Markakis did kind of an about-face to rejoin the team. But, boy, listening to Tom Glavin, he said that, he had spoken to Nick, and he said, it really doesn't surprise me that, Hugh, that itch is just too strong,
Yeah, and you know what? I wonder for Nick, what kind of conversation he had with his family, because that's a conversation you got to have with your wife, man. You got to have that conversation with your wife. And it was funny because me and Abe were texting back and forth, and I said he must have felt the same way that you felt when he saw that play by Marcell Ozuna. And that's probably why he decided to change his mind, because, you pointed out the other day that you felt like if Marcell Ozuna would have made that play, then it would have been a different outcome for the game the other night. So he probably saw the same thing and then decided to come back. Man, I commend him for that. It must have been tough. And I'm pretty sure that everybody that is deciding to opt out for the season, for whatever reasons, is they're gonna have that moment. They're gonna have that moment. Because it's like, this is your time. This is your season. And you're doing something that normally you wouldn't, you wouldn't be doing. You're sitting out and you still got, you got some play left in your body and everything. So it's a little bit different, but hey, either way, can't judge a person for making the decision that they make. That's how I look at it.
No, I again, opt in, opt out, come back in. I'm all, as long as Nick Markakis is comfortable with where he's at, I can imagine, Hugh, if you still feel like, you can play and you can contribute and you could be a big factor on the team, but he's just walking around the house watching them play baseball and it's just, tearing at him because he's like, I got to get out there. This is what I do. This is what I love. I can't live without it. And so, I always wondered how hard it would be for a professional athlete. And we talked about this before. The decision to walk away. Hugh, when you either make it or it's made for you, you're cut or you're injured and you can't play, but when you get to make that decision of when to walk away, has got to be the hardest decision to make because you're usually, if you're not hurt or something, you can still play, it's not just a monetary decision, it's a decision, Hugh, of what you did your entire life and what you love to do.
Yeah, no question about that, John. And like I said, my decision was made for me. I didn't have a choice. And it was one that I think when I think back on it now, it's probably the best because I would have tried my old butt out there and try to play as long as they would allow me to play. That's kind of how it was for me. You have some guys that they get a shot at it and then they walk away on their own terms. That's a privilege that's not allotted to a whole lot of people. So I commend guys and I envy guys that were in position to do that as well. So, yeah, John, it's one of those things, man, that when you've been doing something for so long, it's tough. It's tough to stop doing that and pivot and do something else in your life. But at the same time, it's gratifying knowing that you left and you did everything that you could possibly do and you left on your own terms.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. It's one thing to be cut, another thing to say wave goodbye, and I can't even imagine how difficult that must be to just say, yeah, I'm not going to do it anymore for something that you again, that you love to do. We'll certainly be talking about this more through the program here. What does the return of Nick Markakis mean to the Atlanta Braves? And what's going to happen now with this roster? Because they'll probably have to make a move or two as well. And how quickly could he possibly be back and things of that nature? And what does he offer the team, really, in terms of being able to be a part of a team that hopefully can contend for a title? There was another little bit of news of college football yesterday. The ACC came out and said, okay, we're going to play an 11-game schedule this year, which is adventurous, that's for sure. And the 11-game schedule will include 10 conference games and one bonus game. And the reason that the ACC said that is because they wanted to preserve all those great rivalries that they play at the end of the year, like Georgia Tech and whatnot. So now how did Florida State, Louisville, Kentucky, Clemson, South Carolina. So the SEC is going to have to kind of react to that a little bit about how they handle that that schedule here with the ACC. And Notre Dame will be a full-fledged member of the ACC for at least 1 year in the ACC. I will say this, Hugh, the ACC came out with a schedule that was, at the very least, it was ambitious.
Yeah, you know? I mean, everybody's schedule is going to be ambitious. You know, it's gotten to the point now, John, where people are asking, you know, because of everything that has been pushed back and everything that's happening and what it looks like if we're going to have a full slate of games. I think that we are. Now, how we get to that is going to be interesting. You know, how we get to the end of the season is going to be interesting. And if there are going to be teams that make it all the way through the season, that's going to be interesting. But, yeah, I think that we're going to be in a situation this year where everything that we do is going to be an adjustment, and it's going to be a week-to-week thing. We're going to probably do this on the fly.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that includes fans, too. I know that there's probably been no other – you know, sport other than football that has talked more about the concept of having fans at games. You don't hear it much. Obviously, basketball's playing in a bubble, which, by the way, well, welcome back to basketball.
That's tonight, right?
Yeah, right.
Tonight's Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, here
it's
we
Thursday?
Go.
Yeah, I mean, it's
yeah,
Thursday,
it's,
right?
It's Thursday.
Thursday.
Yep,
okay,
here we go with NBA basketball down in the bubble. Are you ready for NBA basketball? This is going to be different to watch, isn't it, down in the bubble? Yeah.
You know what? For me personally, I don't have any skin in the game. You know, they're just starting back up. I'll watch a little bit of it to see how it looks, you know, with them coming back. But it's probably going to be tough until we get closer to, you know, the finals, you know, to be honest, because it's just like, man, it's going to be a tough spot. It's definitely going to be a tough spot, but I'm going to definitely tune in and see what it looks like.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's basically where I'm at, too. And of course, I understand why the NBA made the decisions that it made, Hugh. But when the Atlanta Hawks aren't there, you know, I that's my team, so I kind of go, okay. You know, I really don't care who wins between the Denver Nuggets and the, whoever, you know, Portland Trailblazers. I don't care. You know, I mean, just tell me who won. You know, I mean, unless it's the Western Finals, I'm not locked into an early season game between those two because that's just not kind of basketball fan I am. I'm more of a, you know, Hawks fan, and then, okay, if there's other big games. I mean, it doesn't mean I'm not interested in seeing some of the big matchups. I am. But this being baseball season and theoretically, I guess, soccer season, whenever we get word on Atlanta United, I don't know. I mean, right now I tend to – I'll look forward like you to the NBA Finals. Which,
yeah.
You know, I wondered a little bit. You know, they're not in that bubble, right? And then they're not going to break the bubble. But I wonder if they gave any thought to the fact that maybe we could get to the NBA Finals and move that to the home courts of the two teams. I don't know.
John, let the bubble do what the bubble's doing.
I don't.
Mean, they haven't had any issues outside of some of the little hiccups that they had. Let the bubble do what the bubble's doing.
You're right.
Let it do what it do.
Hey, listen, the bubble is the way I was worried that the bubble might not be the way to go, but it looks like the bubble might be the way to go. You know, and I know you guys talked about the NFL bubble. We'll talk a little bit about a college football bubble, which I think they ought to consider. Maybe the bubble does work. Because there's, like, what people don't understand about the PGA Tour is the PGA Tour is really in, even though they're playing at different courses every week, they're really in a bubble. Because they all fly in the same plane and they all, they're all in the same. You can't leave the bubble if you're on the PGA Tour. See what I'm saying? I mean, you're in a different kind of bubble.
I hear you. It's a little bit different trying to navigate a bubble with like over 100 people in it. And that's one team. almost close to 100 people on one squad. Yeah, that's a lot of people.
Morning show with John and Hugh. Braves win last night and get back to 500 on the season. And we'll take on Tampa again tonight. A lot to get into. A very busy show. Thursdays are always loaded, so a lot of interviews to get into. And what a former Falcons star said about the offensive line of the Atlanta Falcons this year and whether or not it's going to be any good. We'll tell you what he said. Well, we won't tell you what he said. He'll say it himself. When we return on the Morning Show with John and Hugh next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com after a CBS Sports Minute.
Game.
Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I have a Hugh Douglas on love-hate with these, like, off-season lists. You know, when it's off-season list season, so to speak, and because we do them, I'm fascinated by lists because I'm a fan and I like them. And yet, sometimes when they come out with a list of the top this or that, and I don't agree with it, I get into my feelings a little bit. Boy, were Falcons fans in their feelings about the NFL's list of the top 100 players in the league this year. Whew, man, were they hot. The NFL comes out every year with its top 100 players. Matt Ryan was not in the top 100. Josh Allen was. Matt Ryan was not.
Yeah. Who else? What's the guy name? I always forget his name. Minnesota Vikings quarterback.
Kirk Cousins.
Kate, always have a brain fart when it comes to Kirk Cousins' name. But, yeah, he was on the list.
Josh Overthrow Allen was on the list, who has accomplished exactly what in his career. He was in the top 100.
Can I listen? The one thing that people have to understand, and I know a little bit about this because I was at ESPN. It's the new hotness. Some of these lists that people make, a lot of these lists that people make, it's because they go by, it's almost like a popularity contest in a sense, or they go by, you know, the hot name for that moment, or somebody will throw a name. Oh yeah, he's pretty good. Man, listen, I don't really think that there's anybody of any kind of credibility that are making some of these lists. Like, seriously, they're not. Because, you know, it's like they go by who they feel is popular at the time or yada, yada, yada. Come on, man. Go on with that. So I don't put any stock into any of these lists that I see for the most part. None of them.
Well, Lamar Jackson checked in at number one. There were some Kansas City Chiefs fans that were none too happy about that either. You know, they're saying, hey, Lamar's a fine football player. He's a really great football player, but we have a guy that probably ought to be number one on that list.
Yeah, you mean the guy that just got a half a bill and bought a piece of a baseball franchise?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, all of that. I mean, yeah. And probably look at his numbers. Probably better. Well, I mean, you don't have to look at his numbers. You look at that, how far they went in the playoffs and what he's done over the past few years. Come on, man.
Yeah, this is not the first list that Matt Ryan has been dissed on. He gets dissed on by his own fans. I mean, the guy just, you know, it's like, you know, what does he have to do, you know, to get, well,
he should have been in
what?
The top 100. I don't know where you want to put him, but he should have been in the top 100.
Yeah, you would think you would put him among the top 10 quarterbacks in the league, but they didn't. They had, you know, it's always this, well, Carson Wentz is, but Matt Ryan isn't. Josh Allen is, Kyler Murray. I mean, I like Kyler Murray. He's a good young quarterback, but exactly what has he accomplished out there? Do you think the Falcons would be better with I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, Matt Ryan just doesn't get the credit he deserves, and maybe he won't. Even with an MVP under his belt and taking a team to a Super Bowl and another team to an NFC title game, until he, you know, I guess for him, Hugh, it really is going to be about winning that ring. If he gets the ring, then maybe they'll finally go, oh, you know, he's pretty good. You know who went through this in a little way, and I'm not trying to compare him to him, is John Elway. I mean, John Elway was considered to be a great quarterback, but there was always that, okay. But you know what? You know, Elway really, you know.
Until he had that breakthrough.
Yep.
Until they got, you know, who was it, Terrell Davis?
Yep.
And then when he had that breakthrough. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, it's the same. It's kind of the same thing, going along the same timeline. You know, great quarterback, potential Hall of Famer. I think he's a Hall of Famer, but has not broken through. That's what people remember. And I remember being on the listening to the broadcast, forgot who we were playing, but Moose was talking about that. Well, you know, that Super Bowl matters. I mean, and to a certain extent it does, but hell, did it matter for Dan Fouts?
Mm-hmm.
Warren Moon?
Dan Marino.
You know, I mean, it's good. Like Matt still in his in Matt still has the ability to change that, but it doesn't diminish what he's already accomplished in the NFL. Now he can make it. He can solidify that and make it a whole lot easier if he wins one, but it does not diminish what he's already accomplished in the NFL.
Well, if Matt's going to have a big year this year, he's going to have to do it behind that offensive line. Is going to have to be better than it was last year, and maybe they have a chance to do it. Keenan Forney is certainly a name that most Falcons fans know, great offensive lineman, and talked with Duke Sabel yesterday about the Falcons' offensive line coming into this year, the one to protect Matt Ryan, and the DMB asked Keenan about working with Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry and how that came together.
It was just one of those things where last year, I went up to the facility and I met both of them. I liked their spirit, and this offseason, with everything going on, I reached out to Chris Lindstrom and asked him, did he want to come by the facility? Because you know, really, I like to pay it forward with these linemen, and you know, he was receptive to it, and he came by. And we've been working together for close to a month now.
I want to ask you about McGarry. He's a physical specimen, man. I mean, he's 6'6", you know, 300-plus pounds. What do you see in McGarry that you go, this kid can be really good as you watch him and his technique right now?
Well, the first thing is that, you know, he checks all the, you know, he checks everything on the list, you know, as far as what you want in a tackle. You know, he's tall. He's got some decent length to his arms. He's athletic. And also, too, he's strong, but the last thing that I love is that, you know, he's a fighter. You know, Caleb is one of those guys where if me and him, if we're going to a bar somewhere, something pop off, I want Caleb right next to me, you know. Hell, he might even be the one starting the thing, you know what I mean?
So, yeah, right.
I just love his attitude. You know, you got to have a nasty attitude when you're playing O-line. You got to be able to, I mean, you got to be able to dish it out and not take nothing.
Yeah, man. Keenan Forney is with us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. He's working with the lineman. That's why he's here, as we're getting ready for camp. And you just talked about it, Keenan. Back in the day, you had like Mud Duck on one side. I know Todd Weiner was there for almost all the time you were there. And last year, as a rookie, he had a lot of turnover. So how difficult is that? And as you get better, you got to have the same guy next year. It makes it easier.
Well, it's nice to have somebody that you're kind of in sync with, that you get that chemistry with. And I believe that's why, you know, when Caleb got back into town, that's why Chris called him up and had him to come by so they could continue to work on their chemistry. And, you know, it's always nice to know what your guy's thinking when you're playing with somebody. There was plenty of times where me and Todd Weiner, you know, you're in a loud stadium and you might not can hear what he's calling, but at least we look at each other, we make that eye contact, and we know how we're trying to attack this certain block, you know, based on what the defense is giving us. So, you know, it's that right there takes a little bit of time. And they're working on it now, and they'll get better at it the more that they keep working at it. You know, to me, there's nothing, you can't get ready for football by just lifting weights and running in the nice, pretty tight. You got to get out there and actually do some football and push on some people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You got to be able to get out there and get your conditioning together, because there's nothing like pushing against somebody and having to, you know, do it and then go rest for 20 seconds and then line up and do it again and be able to talk and communicate with the guy to the left or to the right of you, you know? So, the more they do it, the better they'll get. I'm glad that they're coming in and working on some of these combinations, because it's been a true pleasure. Because I tell you what, being around them makes me want to come back out of retirement and play. You know, just their attitude, you know, because Chris Lindstrom, he comes in bright-eyed, ready to get it every day. You know, he's calling me up trying to, you know, go work out at 7:30 in the morning, you know, which I don't mind, because I'm just sitting around, you know, training my other high school, college kids, right. You know, and, you know, to me, just anybody that's willing to do more than what's required, you can't, I mean, you love working with guys like that. And, you know, Chris has been great the past month, and he's getting Caleb on it. And, you know, they had Sean Harlow in the other day, three Gary guys. They just, you know, they love the grind. They love the grind. And, man, I love to help them to pass something down to them so they can, you know, just be better going forward in their career. Someone did it for me. I don't know if you guys know who Steve Wallace is. He played for the 49ers.
Yeah.
Steve Wallace did that for me going into my third year, where you know, for an offensive lineman, it's one of those deals. Hey, are you going to stick around? Are you going to be the guy? Or are we going to have to find somebody else? And Steve Wallace used to go with me at Chamblee High School in the offseason all the time, working on shooting my hips, working on, you know, different little tricks of the trade that you can only pick up by playing football. You know, that's what I like to call on-the-job experience. So I learned some things from him and came up with some things of my own, you know, came up with my own flavor of gumbo. And so I'm trying to pass it to Chris so he can, you know, use it as well. And, you know, I need another guard to get into the Pro Bowl for the Atlanta Falcons, you know, and Chris is a great kid. And I want to see him succeed. You know, that's just the fan in me. You know, I support the Atlanta Falcons. You know, they still have me out to do a bunch of appearances and, you know, bring me out to the games, you know, just showing me respect. So this is kind of my way of paying them back, but also, too, just passing the game down to the younger generation.
It's Keenan Forney, guys. If you're just tuning in, a longtime Falcon lineman now working with the present Falcon lineman and a good dude. And for those who remember, he was part of that Falcon team, went up to Green Bay, got the win with Mike Vick against the Packers. And again, we talked about meanness and nastiness, you know, with the O-line back in the day. What was it like blocking for Vick? Because I remember sometimes he would kind of freelance behind you guys.
You know, I get asked that question quite a bit. You know, a lot of people think that it might be hard to block for a mobile quarterback like Mike, but I loved it just because, you know, let's be honest, you know, when you're sometimes as an offensive lineman, you can mess up, you know, you can get beat real quick, and Michael gives somebody a little footwork and dance and get you out of trouble, you know. There was a couple times, you know, I might have missed on my guy, and you know, going back to the huddle, be like, hey, man, Mike, my bad, dog. And he was like, hey, it's all good. And he'd line it up and do it again. So, but also, too, it was exciting because there was plenty of times when he'd make a play and you might be busy blocking for your guy, but you hear the crowd going crazy. And now you walking back to the huddle and you're looking at the jumbotron like, God, dog, look at that. He just snapped off a 20, 30-yard run. You know, or he just had this hell of a throw. Whatever it was, you know, he was just superb. He was dynamic. You know, I think you guys remember as well as the city of Atlanta. Every Sunday, he was, you know, he was going to do something different. You know, he was just so, you know,
unique.
He was one of a kind.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, unique, no doubt. Keenan, I want to ask you this about our guys, and I want to ask you how much of this has changed. Is it more about feet or hands now? We see these defensive linebackers, these defensive ends, using more hands, slapping, all this hand-to-hand combat stuff. For offensive linemen and for guys like Caleb McGarry and Chris Lindstrom, is it more about feet or hands?
I would say it's a combination of both, because you can't just set somebody the same way play after play, you know, throughout the whole game. You know, they're playing different little hand games with you. You got to play different hand games with them. You got to show them different sets. You know, it's too many times I see offensive linemen, they'll just angle set a guy, and now next thing you know, they're getting beat back inside either by chopping a spin or a cross chop back inside, or, you know, there, to me, like an angle set, too many times it leaves you open for something else. So you got to be able to show them a jump set. You got to be able to show them an aggressive set, you know, which there's a difference between the two. You know, you got to be able to vertical set guys. You got to be able to, you know, sometimes, you know, what I found in my career, you might not be able to just set and punch somebody with your hands because they're too strong. You might have to come out there and actually be like a boxer with them and just continually punch them and shoot some energy in their body to keep them from coming into you. You've got to be able to jump set guys a little bit, depending on down and distance. You got to be able to aggressive set guys, which there's a difference. There's some people that think that jump set and an aggressive set, they're the same. No, they're two different things. You know, jump set is more into the line. An aggressive set is more, I'm going to set him a little bit harder and make him have to declare his move right now. You know, you got to be able to show those guys different things. It's like a pitcher out there. You can't go out there fastball. Somebody going to knock it out the park. You got to be able to change it up with a slider. You know, you got to be able to give them a change up. It's a game within a game.
Yeah.
See that?
Matter of fact, I was just over at Chuck Smith's gym last week and was watching him work with some of his D linemen, because I like to get inside the head of what they're doing so I can coach my guys better. And me and him, we were watching, and I was asking him questions, you know, because he's the guru at what he does. And we were just talking, man, boy, this thing is a game within a game.
It is indeed, boy, and if he can impart any of that into those young offensive linemen, future of the Atlanta Falcons offensive line going to be, especially on that right side, pretty darn sweet. Yeah, and for Matt Hennessy, too, not just Lindstrom and McGarry. All right, it is off and running on a very busy Thursday show. We are loaded on the show this morning. What is coming back to television soon in a few weeks that is going to spark a bonus rapid-fire question to everybody on the show? We're going to do that next with John and you on the morning show on Sports Radio. And matter of fact, you can answer this question, too. We'll do that next after we take a quick time out of the morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and streaming worldwide on radio.com. Show, you know, a game show for 38 straight years.
Be like, every day.
Get a little bored of, you know, that's what you're talking about.
That's like a government job, damn near, as long as they've been doing it. I mean, and yeah, Vanna White, they've been holding it down for a long time, so God bless both of them.
You know, you're getting a little bit long in the tooth when, or you've been around a while, let's put it that way, when you remember both Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy and the hosts before, Alex Trebek and Pat Sajak. And I remember both of them. Chuck Woolery did Wheel of Fortune for a number of years. And then Pat Sajak took over.
I remember the name Chuck Woolery. I do remember that.
And Art Fleming did Jeopardy for a long time. I mean, Jeopardy's been around for 55 years. I mean, it started in the early 60s. I mean, these shows have been around forever.
That's what's up.
Yeah, that's what's up. So let me do a wondering here with these two shows coming back again. And, 37 and 38 years for Trebek and for Sajak and Vanna White. What's the best TV game show? But you can't, Hugh, who the hell knows what the best one is? I mean, I guess one of these two because they've been around for so long.
I guess the best one is the one that you like.
So what is your favorite? Because there's no best, right? What if you think of all the TV game shows all time, okay, this is like a bonus rapid fire question. All the TV game shows you've ever seen, what's your favorite TV game show?
What was the dude's name that used to play on Hogan's Heroes that used to kiss all the women? Now that
Richard Dawson.
Richard Dawson, real creepy dude. Yeah, he real creepy Richard Dawson.
Yeah, what was that? Before, and the people don't really remember that before Steve Harvey, there was Richard Dawson when
Survey
the original
says?
Family Feud.
Yeah.
Well, there was eight hosts before Steve Harvey. There was Louis Anderson.
Louis Anderson, right.
Ray Combs. There was the guy who played Al on Home Improvement, Richard Karn, I think is what his
Richard
name?
Richard Karns, yeah. Yeah, it is the 50 floor commercials, right?
Yeah, so there was a ton of guys in between.
Like Richard Dawson because nowadays he would definitely be in jail for some of the stuff that he was doing on TV.
Get a little too close there, Richard.
No, but how about this, though? This is the thing about it. Like, back then, it was like that's what he did. Like, he was touching and kissing on everybody's woman.
On the lips. It's kind of informal to the cheek kiss, but Richard would come up and be like, "Hey, what's going
Richard
on, Grandma?"
Folks in the mouth, yeah,
mouth
Richard,
kiss.
Yeah, Richard, like Richard.
In the
would
age
definitely
of COVID,
be,
that would not happen.
Yeah, not only that, just
he was
just
a little touchy feely, right?
Yeah, he was a wild dude.
What's your favorite game show of all time?
I got a couple. I love the show that Trebek did while he was doing Jeopardy way back when. Classic Concentration. That was a fun game. The game with the whammy, Press Your Luck, because it's just the sheer randomness of that game, and then the no whammy, stop, and when they get the whammy, it's always fun watching them just break on air.
Well, there was no game show that really captured the imagination more than Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, that's for sure, and because it was on every single night for a while, late Regis Philbin. I'm sure that would be one of the ones that would get a lot of votes if we were doing a vote. But that's just a favorite of all time. What is your favorite game show of all time, Abe Gordon?
Yeah, I mean, you guys know me. I'm a trivia guy at heart. I enjoy the ones I can play at home. Just watching a game show to me isn't anything special. But being able to play it at home, participate, is what I enjoy. So Jeopardy. So Jeopardy's pretty high up there. Family Feud's good too, but Jeopardy to me has always been the best one.
Can you see A with his monster piece sitting there in front of the TV, answering the questions way before everybody else does?
Just talking arguing, about I need man.
Every night, Hugh. Every night, baby.
Yeah, but he was, unlike the rest of us, he was actually on a game show once. You were on Sports Jeopardy, right?
I was on Sports Jeopardy. Yes, I was.
So tell me a little bit about that experience and how nerve-wracking that was and how you did.
I wasn't overly nerve-wracked. I mean, everyone there. So here's the thing about Jeopardy in general, but Sports Jeopardy also. Everyone knows all of the answers, all right? So it really comes down to who's best with the buzzer. And this wasn't just me. This is pretty much every episode ever filmed. Like, everyone knows all the answers. So it's really a timing thing. Mm-hmm. And if you can't figure out the buzzer, you're not going to win. And it's really that simple. Mostly, you can get a little bit lucky with specific topics or discussions along those lines, categories, whatnot. But it's really just about the buzzer.
Right, but you say figure out the buzzer. I mean, isn't it just, you know, you put your finger on it and just go click, 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 click?
But it's
click.
A timing thing. It's not activated. They have to actually activate the buzzers. They don't activate the buzzers until Alex Trebek or, for Sports Jeopardy, Dan Patrick finishes reading the question. And so it's a timing thing of when he finishes reading it to when they activate it. Because if you buzz in early, your buzzer gets turned off for like a half a second when they do activate it. So if you buzz in too early, you're not going to be able to buzz in when they do activate it.
Didn't know it was that complicated. Okay, I got you. All right, I didn't realize.
Didn't used to be. The first season under Alex Trebek, it was just as soon as they started the question, you could buzz in. And then they modified it to an activation, and it totally changed the game.
Yeah, so
because people used to just buzz in before the question was read if it was a category they felt comfortable with, and mm-hmm. then they would just read the question themselves, answer it. So they modified that.
And Hugh, did you ever want to be on a game show?
Nope, no desire to do that.
Yeah,
I mean, actually had to get dressed up. So yeah, no,
well, unless you were doing like Let's Make a Deal, and then you could dress up like any way you wanted to.
No, I was good.
You'd be cosplaying.
Now, I definitely want to do the cosplay thing, but yeah, that's something that's totally out of the realm of what we're talking about right now. Not the mm-hmm. same thing as a game show, but yeah, definitely want to do.
Well, yeah, Let's Make a Deal. That's the whole. That was the whole concept. Was how weird could you be, you know, with your costume? You know, no newlywed game for you then. I'm thinking. Whatever happened to
me? What are you trying to say?
I'm just not trying to get
newlywed. I'm not trying to get married.
I just.
I like my freedom. I like to be able to come and go and watch TV as I please. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I had for dinner last night, do you, don't you?
What's that?
I had meatloaf.
I had meatloaf, too. I had meatloaf. And people clown me. You know, it's funny. More women, like the guys.
Uh-huh.
The guys were like, they were like, hey, man, you know, hey, way to go.
Give
you know,
some backstory here, Hugh.
A little backstory is right.
A little backstory here, Hugh.
What?
I ate my wife's meatloaf last night. She made meatloaf, but you?
I made my own meatloaf. I made it, and you know, I had a taste for meatloaf.
Mm-hmm, I did too.
So I made meatloaf, and it was different because it was actually taco. I had a recipe for taco meatloaf, so that's why it looked a little weird. And for me, it was the first time I've ever done it. And this is where I messed up at. I made too much because the recipe called for 2 pounds of meatloaf.
All right.
And I thought that was not going to be enough. So I made 4 pounds.
Wow.
So it looked like a big old hamburger. It looked like a big old hamburger. Yeah. And after I made it, I'm like, man, I'm going to be eating meatloaf for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm going to be eating meatloaf for a while. So my cousin told me to cut it in half and freeze some of it. And I can eat it later.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I made 4 pounds of meatloaf. Four whole pounds of meatloaf. It's a lot of meatloaf.
And was it tasty?
It was pretty good. But you know, with meatloaf, especially anything that you cook, like, say, tacos, anything, they taste better the next day.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to let it sit for a little while, and then I'm going to eat a little bit of it today. But for the first one and the recipe that I had, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad at all.
Chef Yu is on the roll. Here we go. You know, we're gonna have to have a special segment of this show in the not too distant
future. But
it
looked like a big old. But when you look at the picture, John, it looked like a big ass hamburger.
Yeah, I saw it.
And everybody was like, "Well, why didn't you put it in the pan?" And I was like, "Well, look how big it is. What pan do you see? What loaf pan do you know?"
I was impressed that you kept it into you formed it into a circle and it stayed in that circle without a pan.
It did. And it was because it was a lot. You know, with the egg is what makes the meatloaf stay together.
You had to put like four or five eggs in that, didn't you?
No, it was two. It was
two
eggs. Yeah, it was two eggs because the recipe called for 2 pounds, but I put 4 pounds. So that's where, you know, if it had been 2 pounds, it would have looked a lot better. It looked a lot better, but I was being a little greedy. And I was like, next time I do it, I can't do it. I just have to follow the recipe. So, yeah,
2 pounds is a lot. That's what my wife, what the Maven made, 2 pounds. And that's a huge loaf. And get you one of them, you know, loaf pans if you want. You know,
but that was a lot for what I made. That would have been a big ass loaf pan. That had to be a big loaf pan. That's like, yeah,
yeah, it would have been.
So yeah, I'm gonna be eating no meatloaf for a while. I'll be meatloafed out for a while.
go get you. You know, do you like mashed potatoes?
Yeah, mashed potatoes are good. I mean, I have sides, but I wanted it because it's like it was something different, and it was like taco. It has sour cream in it. It has salsa.
Oh, well, right. It's not a traditional meatloaf.
It's not a traditional meatloaf. So it wasn't bad for the first one.
Bad. I'm giving you thumbs up. Props you, Chef Yu. Now we got to get you trying some other dishes. You know, I can send you some recipes, and you can give them a shot.
Yeah, I'm gonna do something, but I like the easy recipes. The Maven's one. You know, I don't feel like washing a whole lot of dishes. okay, or meatloaf.
Yeah, I figure once we mentioned this that was going to happen. Yeah. Well, you know, you get it right 2 out of every 3 times, and 2 out of 3 ain't bad. All right, so let's go to the morning mashup, which is next with Oren doing his job again explicitly and does it very, very well. Morning Mashup, some of the interesting stories from last night and more as we continue with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the game and worldwide at radio.com.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.